This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
For the latest in movie news and box office reports, welcome to the Cinema Recap Podcast. And now for your hosts, your friends and mine, John Bonham and Mark Jadson.
All right, everybody. Welcome to your weekly edition of Cinema Recap. We've got your hosts, John Bonham, as always, joined by Mark Jackson. Mark, what's going on, man? What's new today?
You know, what's new, John? I'm feeling pretty good. I would be feeling a lot better if I still had an opportunity to win some of this pool money for this upcoming national championship game. So, long story short, I've been playing in the same pool for about 10 years now. Started out when I was a freshman in college, and just was limited to our floor first. We had about 20 people on it, but since then, it's gotten bigger and bigger over the years. And this year was the biggest it's ever been at 103 people total.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, everyone picks, you know, teams and gets to the Final Four, et cetera. I don't know. I kept on just trucking along. And, you know, before I know it, some people start suffering catastrophic losses. You know, Duke falls and people at UNC going down, et cetera. So, you know, I'm slowly but steadily climbing up there. And before you know it, like, I have an amazing Elite Eight, and I've got three out of four teams in the Final Four. The only team I missed on was Texas Tech. So I'm feeling pretty good. You know, I've got one possible outcome for me to win all the money. This was going into Saturday. I had Virginia beating Michigan State. So a lot of people saw that wild, you know, Virginia win. So I was feeling pretty elated, but then, you know, the second half happened with that Michigan State-Texas Tech game, and, you know, my hopes kind of went down the drain there. I would have maybe came out $1,400 above. So I can still finish third, and I will finish third since I have Virginia there. But that third place, I'm going to be tied with someone else, so I'm looking at either about $50 or $100. I kind of rambled on there, but yeah, you know, it's a heck of a showing, but man, I was just so close to maybe having a real opportunity to get that 1,400, greenbacks.
Oh, that's rough, man.
That's like the way it goes. I guess I'm happy to at least kind of be in it long enough, but, you know, man, I was so close.
Well, that's a good point, man. You know, when you have a good bracket that keeps it exciting for you throughout the entire tournament,
yep.
I think it's worth your investment at that point. But when you're even looking to get some money back on top of that, then I'd say it's a pretty successful March Madness for you.
Yeah, to put in 20 and maybe get back 50, you know, not $1,400, but I'll still get a good ROI. So I will take it in some way.
That ain't bad, man. So I got a couple new things, Mark. As I mentioned to you, I was doing some apartment / city searching over the weekend. And what I was looking is in North Carolina, I looked in Raleigh, and then I looked in Durham. And I got like a little bit of a, you know, I guess a movie, like kind of a slight dream come true, if you will.
Yeah.
I'm a huge Bull Durham fan. It's my favorite sports movie, maybe a top five all-time movie for me.
Right.
You know, love Kevin Costner portraying Crash Davis, probably one of my favorite movie characters right there. And I got to see the old Durham Bulls stadium where they filmed the movie.
Wow.
I know. I mean, for a lot of people are probably like, all right, who cares? But I don't know, man. I had like such a sense of nostalgia. I was standing there taking some pictures, like replaying you know, some scenes in my head as they would have, you know, happened on that field.
Sure.
So it was, I don't know, I'm kind of a nerd, but it was a special moment for me.
Hey man, wherever you can you know, kind of see the actual scene of what you grew up with, that's interesting. That's cool. That's an opportunity you should always take.
Yeah, no, it was awesome, man. It was a cool experience. Have you ever had a moment like that, whether it's, you know, meeting a favorite celebrity or getting to visit a place that, you know, is in a movie that you love?
Ah, man, I can't say for certain. I guess the only small comparison I'd have to that is Major League. I'm a huge fan of Major League, and I grew up in Tucson, Arizona, and they actually filmed a lot of the spring training there at a site called High Corbett Field. And I mean, it was kind of cool on some ways to go through all the nooks and crannies. And we had been to a lot of minor leagues games. They were dirt cheap and really good quality too. But I'd say that's probably the closest thing to kind of replicate your feeling that you had. Maybe not the exact same way, but still nice to know. Wow, they filmed a good chunk of this Major League movie right here on site at this average. AAA stadium. So that's my connection.
I think that's probably a pretty similar experience that we both had.
Yeah.
And if you've not read Mark's piece on Major League, then definitely check it out on thatmomentin.com. So I got one other thing I wanted to ask you about, Mark. This is kind of random. I went and saw a movie yesterday. We'll talk about it more in a little bit here. But I'm sitting there and I'm right on the aisle because I like to have an easy exit whenever I go to a movie.
Sure.
And two people were letting their kids just go crazy up and down the stairs next to me.
Oh, man.
Like, they were climbing all over the rails. They were loud, obnoxious, and noisy. And I didn't say anything because I'm a pretty non-confrontational person.
Sure.
But it got me thinking, like, is that an okay situation to say to the parent, like, get your kid under control? Or am I just turning into kind of like a crotchety old man that, doesn't like little kids in public?
No, I think there's a limit to everything. I mean, generally, I'm a guy, too, that can, take a lot. I don't really say a whole bunch unless something kind of needs to be said. But I would think, it sounds like the movie was going on while they were doing this.
Oh, 100%.
Oh, wow. Then that, I feel like if it's going on, then I'm sure you weren't the only person that felt this way. I imagine, if you went to the movie that I thought you went to go to, there's some good amount of people in that screening, in that theater. So I'm sure you weren't the only person to feel that way. Sounds like they might have stopped, but it sounds like it went on a lot longer than it really needed to. I probably eventually would have said something. I'm that guy, if I see someone on their phone during the previews, I will kind of look at them a little bit, but I won't necessarily say anything. But if it's still on, or you're like actively taking a call while the screenings or the trailers are going on, I will look at you a little more. But if you're still doing that while the movie's actually started, then I mean that's the cutoff, man. Someone has to say something, or get the usher or something like that. But that's just disrespectful, and I even feel like for the parents there. I don't know, whatever you got to do. If you got to take your kids out and, lecture them or something, but, it's not just your private theater. You're sharing this with other people. So, let's try to be courteous about it.
All right, we're on the same page. I thought it was fair grounds for saying something.
Yeah.
Had it been, Avengers Endgame, I think I definitely would have.
Sure.
Because this is, an all-time theater experience that I'm excited for. Which, this movie, not quite so much. So I wasn't as, perturbed, but, all right. No, I think I'll feel like I'm in the right moving forward.
There we go.
All right. Well, I'm sorry. Got off on some tangents there. It's going to be a long episode. We've got a lot to talk about aside from this stuff. So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump into, this week's real news.
Who likes good news? Everyone? Then good news, everyone!
We got a lot of stuff, Mark. Did you want to start with anything in particular?
So I'll kick it off. Anyone who's NBA fans, I think you are. I know I am. But, LeBron James, first year at the Lakers, he's had, to put it nicely, he's had a trying time there in Los Angeles. His team's not making the playoffs. There's a lot of reports coming on that the chemistry's bad and, it's been doomed from the get-go. But, LeBron James made this move to L.A. kind of to start his foray into Hollywood, more or less. And, he's doing the Space Jam 2 sequel coming out in 2021. But there's been, some reports that he's having a lot of issues recruiting, fellow NBA talent superstars to want to join him in the movie. I found that super interesting, super surprising. On one hand, you'd think that, you know, a lot of guys, they want to be on the silver screen. They would love to, you know, have the opportunity. But on another hand, you're kind of reading more into it, and you're like, man, I think what I've heard is, like, the Stars necessarily don't want to be put in a bad light, you know, being dominated by LeBron or something. So I just found that pretty fascinating. Kind of a innocuous story, but still one that I kind of gave a lot of thought to. What's your takeaway?
Man, it just, you know, hearing that, it kind of makes me think about how much of a difference there must be in the perception of LeBron James and Michael Jordan. I mean, and again, I was so young when the original Space Jam came out. Sure. That, you know, I didn't really know any news about it, mm-hmm. kind of behind the scenes rumblings. But my guess would be, you know, people were chomping at the bit to get in a movie with Michael Jordan.
Right.
And I don't think he had any trouble recruiting star power for that movie. And I'm pretty shocked to see the reception that LeBron James is getting, trying to get people to come out for it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know exactly what, you know, the exact reasons are, but, you know, that story came out a couple days ago, and I don't know, I guess, you know, if I'm a star and I kind of maybe wanted to be in a movie, I would kind of use this as leverage and, you know, say, hey, LeBron, I'd love to be in your movie. It seems like you're having some issues recruiting superstars. I will do this, but, you know, on this condition, you know, I look good here. Maybe, you know, bump up my my salary here, my take-home pay, whatever. But I found that surprising. And, you know, they got two years to go, but I think they're going to really start moving forward on production a ton this summer. So mm-hmm. we'll see kind of who else fills out the cast. I don't know if he's going to get nothing but A-listers, or now it's going to be a little more of a mix of B-list, NBA superstars. I'm super curious. I don't really have even that much interest in the movie itself, but I'm kind of vaguely attached to, you know, the production and who's going to be filling out what.
I would be really surprised if Dwayne Wade does not have a role in it.
I think Wade would do it. They are the best of buddies. I would be super shocked if he didn't do it. I would imagine his other two guys would probably find a way to do something, Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony. So that, I mean, that gives you four. Typically, you would have like at least a team of five. I don't know who the other people he would lean on right now. Maybe he gets Anthony Davis. You know, maybe
I was going to say, I bet he might go after Anthony Davis.
Yeah, but I mean, if you get that, there's your five. But if you want to fill it out with more, then it might be a little tougher than anyone anticipated.
Yeah, we'll see. But definitely surprising news there that they're having some issues with it.
Yeah.
What we got next? Let's jump into some news that Vern wanted to make sure we touched on. I didn't realize this until he said something that they didn't have Chucky voiced yet, or they just weren't releasing who was going to be the voice of Chucky in Child's Play.
Mm-hmm.
But for the longest time, I thought it was going to be the original voice. I forget the guy's name offhand, but I thought he was going to be the one that was doing it again. Did you know all this, or did you have any of this backstory?
No, I had no backstory on this whatsoever. I'm trying to rack my brain who did the original voice. It's not coming to me immediately, but...
Brad Dourif, I think.
Okay, yeah. I knew little about this. I just recently saw a trailer. It was kind of more of a teaser, so I guess when I hear it, I don't remember hearing a voice in there, so... Yeah, this news is still pretty fresh. As far as itself, you know, I think it's a pretty good pick. I feel like a lot of people now know, Mark as the guy who has done a lot of animated stuff. I mean, me honestly, sometimes I think about him just as much as Luke Skywalker as I do him being the voice of, like, Skips on regular shows. So I know he's got, like, a unique voice, and I'm not concerned he can't do this. I'm kind of, as far as the overall movie itself, I don't know if it's something I've got really, really high anticipation for. I will probably watch it at some point. I imagine it'll be kind of campy. But, I think it's a pretty good choice as far as, you know, who we got to voice Chucky. You got to have someone who, has a unique voice, who can do a lot of things. You can't, you know, use a voice like, I don't know. He's been up on this podcast up before, but like Jason Bateman or something. He's got a very dry voice. You got to have, you know, some character in that voice, and you know, Mark can definitely do that.
That would be hilarious if Jason Bateman did the voice. I might actually be more in on that. Just have like a super sarcastic Chucky character.
You know, man, maybe now we should move forward and well, you know, there's all types of patents and stuff like that and ideas already, but I don't know. Yeah, maybe we should, co-write a horror screenplay and, peg Jason Bateman as the voice of, like, some Annabelle-esque doll and, see how it does. Yeah.
Man, I think that would be, like, the perfect combination of horror comedy right there if you get Bateman involved.
Sure.
Just to be clear, I don't know if I said it was – did I say that it was Mark Hamill that was going to be voicing him? I can't remember if I did or not. Yeah. I know you referenced it.
I'm pretty sure you did. I said Mark a couple times, but, no one was – if anyone's unsure, Mark Hamill from Star Wars fame. He's done some other animated voices too, but he will be doing Chucky.
Yeah, he was the voice of the Joker on the Batman animated series for a long time. So he's got some range. He does creepy well. I think he'll be good.
Yeah.
After Luke Skywalker, I think he's pretty much known as a voice actor and was probably more relevant in that vein for, you know, decades.
Yeah.
Until the Star Wars revamp happened. Yep. So we'll see. I don't know. This was like the scariest thing to me ever as a child was the Chucky doll.
Sure.
To the point where I couldn't even watch the movie. Just the picture of it alone got me. So I don't know. I'm kind of interested to see Aubrey Plaza in the movie.
Okay.
All right. What's next on the list?
I saw this before a movie that I went to watch yesterday. This trailer for Brightburn, man, has me pretty hooked. Directed by James Gunn. He's obviously been in the news recently with being rehired to do Guardians of the Galaxy 3. But have you seen this trailer, John?
I've seen a trailer. I'm not sure if it's the trailer that you're speaking of.
I think it's the trailer. I feel like if they've done anything else, it might have been just like a teaser or something. But this is like a full-on, you know, official 2-minute, 30-second trailer. I don't know, man. I thought it was pretty. I thought it was pretty well done. You know, it's basically what if Superman came to our Earth? The everyone knows how he got here. I forget. Crashed by a meteor or whatever. He lands in some Kansas backyard, and you know, American family takes care of him. It basically has that same setup, but you know, instead of him using the powers for good, it sounds like he does a lot of hell raising. So. I thought there were some really, really cool moments, some kind of uneasy moments, too. They're going for superhero horror, and they're going R, too. I think the official rating that they're going for as far as description is horror, violence, bloody images, and language.
Nice.
So, I mean, it doesn't seem like they're going to pull a whole bunch of punches. I don't know if it'd be, like, full-on, like, gore-heavy, like, what was that movie he did? The Belko Experiment. I don't think it's got to be like that, but it does seem like, you know, it's going for a specific tone. So I'm hooked. It's coming out May. I think it's one of the few movies of May that I'm really, really excited for, along with John Wick Parabellum and other things. So yeah, I can't wait for this to drop.
Yeah, no, I think it's such a unique take on, you know, the superhero genre, something that we haven't seen before. So I'm very excited. So what is it? Gunn is he producing and writing?
I think he's, if I understand correctly, he is. Yeah, you're right. I kind of sold it like he was directing, but now he's. I think his brothers are writing. So what? I could have swore he had some other attachment to it, and maybe he still does. Maybe I'm just getting it wrong, but. I know I saw James Gunn on like that trailer, so that's why the name is sticking with me. But you know, his brothers I think are co-writing it. David Yablonsky looks like he's directing it. Man, I'm trying to rack my brain. What exactly did I see him attached to do with this movie?
I think he's producing it, which
producing.
That's a pretty common move.
Yeah.
With these kind of movies, is the studio will say from
that's right. Yep.
You know, director James Gunn, and he's not actually directing it.
Yep.
But I feel like it'll definitely have his, you know, feel to it. I'm sure he's pretty heavily involved with the production, and Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to check out this new trailer, but the first one that I saw, I was, you know, hooked right away.
Yep, and we're probably referencing the same one, but, you know, some solid stars. I mean, it's not, you know, laden by any stretch of the imagination, but I've always liked David Denman. It looks like he's starting to have a little bit of a moment. He was in 13 Hours. He was in Logan Lucky. A lot of people know him as from The Office, Roy from The Office. So I love to see him in a lot of different things. He plays the father. Elizabeth Banks plays the mother. You know, I think she's talented. Can do a lot of comedy and drama. So yeah, I'm all in. May 24th. Before that week, it's John Wick Parabellum, and then right then from there, it's Brightburn.
Yeah, yeah, should be a good one. Let's stay with trailers for a second. We finally got a first look at Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker in Todd Phillips' adaptation. And I'll come out and say it. I did not love the trailer. Mm-hmm. I don't like what they're going for. They're making him out to be like really creepy, Oedipal complex-ish type character who's just like a weird loser. I don't know. It was not what I thought it was going to be, and I really hope that the vibe is kind of misconstrued in the trailer.
Yeah, yeah, or maybe like a misdirection or something. Yeah. My overall takeaway was I thought it was fine. I'll probably have to see a little bit more to, you know, be super, super invested. I still hold some pretty good hopes, though, just because Joaquin Phoenix is an amazing actor. So I do think that it will I would be very surprised if it's just like a complete, you know, utter fail. But, yeah, I mean, I wasn't necessarily blown away by it by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, it kind of made me realize that maybe I don't need a Joker origin story and I'm fine just having like a pretty iffy understanding of his background. And all I need is, you know, from the Joker on in, like, Heath Ledger's portrayal.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Not what I was expecting. But you know, I got a lot of faith in Joaquin. I think he's one of the best actors out there. So, interesting to see. Interested to see what comes of that.
Right, right.
Did you have any other news you want to talk about?
Yeah, we hit on it just a little bit. And I know the last time that this brought up, I think we talked a little bit about Will Smith not returning for Suicide Squad 2, and Idris Elba was kind of tagged to appear, and I, you know, think just a lot of people, I think ourselves included, assumed that he would be, you know, playing Deadshot. But it has come out recently that he is not going to be playing Deadshot, but a new character. What exactly and who exactly that character is, no one really knows, but they are leaving the opportunity for Will Smith to come back at some point. So it really just kind of gets across the belief that, you know, he maybe would have did it if it meshed with his character, not his character, but meshed with his schedule. So I think it's kind of the best of both worlds. You know, a lot of people, one of the few things they liked about Suicide Squad was, you know, Will Smith as Deadshot. He seemed to really, you know, sell and tap in that character. So there's still an opportunity that he could be coming back at some point. But, you know, if Idris Elba, you know, does a really good job with whatever character he's going to be portraying in this upcoming sequel, then maybe, you know, leaves the opportunity open for, you know, their two characters either, you know, work on the same side or maybe, you know, feud a little bit, have some, you know, cool fight sequences. Who knows? But I think this is, you know, good, interesting news for anyone who, you know, had really high affinity for Smith's character and his work there.
I would venture to say that we have talked about Suicide Squad in 80% of our 2019 podcasts. You would think that we're like two of the biggest fanboys. I don't think either of us even liked the movie.
Yeah, yeah, I thought it was kind of all, you know, pretty average, and I that's probably even, you know, being a little nice about it. I mean, I don't hate it by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, the more, if you kind of gone back and revisited it, I've seen it, like, a little more chunks on HBO, and yeah. It doesn't really get better, you know. If anything, it probably just gets a little worse, so, yeah, we're not fanboys, but, you know, I don't know what it is, but I guess we like talking about it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, definitely one of those things where it's almost like, we hate it so much that we like to talk about it. That's a little extreme, but that's kind of the gist. But there's been a lot of news surrounding it. So, you know, I think we've had to bring it up. And to your point, I'd love to see Idris and Will Smith. I think that'd be awesome if Will Smith did come back and they gave Idris Elba a cool part.
Yeah.
Those two guys starring in a movie, that'd be something special. So hopefully we get that one day.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything else that's we needed to hit on?
I'll breeze through this this last piece, but it looks like the Coen brothers are going to be directing a their own version of Macbeth that stars Denzel Washington and Frances McDormand.
Okay.
Which, you know, I think that's got some pretty serious potential. You know, the Coen brothers have certainly found success with Frances McDormand before in Fargo. I think they, you know, put together some pretty great leading roles for, you know, males, like when they had George Clooney taking his stab at Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which was kind of an adaptation of The Odyssey. So I don't know. I'm you know, fairly excited for this. I'll certainly be, you know, curious to see what kind of spin they put around it. But, you know, I could definitely use another, you know, awesome part for Denzel. I'll pretty much buy into anything that he puts out.
Yeah, I don't really have much more to add on that either. I'm not super, super well-versed in, I've read a little Macbeth, you know, from high school, but man, it's been, you know, so long, I was 10, 11 years ago, but,
right.
You know, yeah, I mean, the Coens, they're unique guys, I'm sure, you know, especially they will play up the dark comedy aspect in some way, shape, or form, like, they've been known to do in almost every single movie they've done. So I'm sure we're probably still years away from this. Like, I can't see it maybe being released until 2021, maybe 2022. Could be surprised, maybe a little earlier. But yeah, you know, once more details start coming out, I'll probably get more invested into it, what that might look like. But yeah, you know, if the Coen brothers come out with something unique, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page there. So with that, I think we'll wrap up the real news, and let's pause for a couple minutes to hear about some friendly podcasts of thatmomentin.com.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hi guys, I'm Dean.
And I'm Daniel.
And we're from the IMDb Journey podcast,
where we break down every movie from the top 250 list, giving our own thoughts and reviews and any general discussion along the way.
But when we're not doing that, we also battle other podcasts in various movie-related games of trivia and drafts.
We also give quick reviews about every other film we've watched as well.
Yeah, here we're quite good too.
Yeah, if you guys don't believe us, why don't you listen to these genuine testimonies?
Oh, hey guys, you guys are really good. I love your chemistry.
Oh, hey, Brew. It's this is a good podcast, yo. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, love the banter, guys. Keep it up.
IMDb Journey is one of my favorite podcasts of all time. Ah, fantastic testimonies.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Absolutely genuine and real. And if you want to give a genuine testimony as well, go ahead and search for IMDb Journey. You can find us on all your favorite podcast sites, including iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify.
So come along and join our journey.
Hi there, Damien here from the Damien Riley Podcast. I hope you tune into my podcast. I love talking about movies and everything about them. You can subscribe at this website, thedamienrileypodcast.com. You can find me on iTunes or blueberry.com, or really anywhere that good podcasts are served up.
And welcome back to Cinema Recap. Got your hosts, John Bonham and Mark Jackson. Go ahead and do a run through of the weekend box office of April 5th through 7th.
I'm putting the burden of lousy movies back on you. It's very simple. If you stop going to bad movies, they'll stop making bad movies.
Uh-oh, the jig is up.
We're going to start at number 6 today, because that's actually a movie that you made it to, Mark. But We've got The Best of Enemies that brought in $4.4 million domestically. So I'll let you run with that one.
Yeah, so I was able to get the Best of Enemies. And, you know, if anyone is unsure or doesn't know much about the story, it is based on a true story. Basically, the story takes place in 1971, Durham, North Carolina, where someone I know is going to be making residence there. But
represent.
Yeah, it started in 1971, and basically, you know, it kind of comes at the tail end of the civil rights era. You know, a lot of areas have done away with segregation, but it hasn't been abolished, so Durham still has segregation. Long story short, there's something that happens to one of the local schools, and they're going to have the black kids. They're trying, a lot of a huge contingent of the black population is trying to get the black kids into, you know, white schools so they can continue their schooling and not, you know, get behind. Obviously, Taraji P. Henson's character, activist Anne Atwater, is fighting for this. She, you know, never has backed down from a fight that, wasn't right. And then you've got another side of the divide, played by Sam Rockwell. He is basically like the leader of the local KKK movement. So they've come, you know, butting heads so often over the last couple years. But this one, you know, they have to not necessarily come together, but they have to kind of represent each side of the divide. And then, you know, for like 10 days, figure out what's going to happen here. Are we going to continue this segregation, or, you know, are we going to bring everyone together? So that is more or less the movie in a nutshell. I don't think I'm spoiling a whole bunch that, you know, it was kind of fascinating because the actual KKK leader, C.P. Ellis, you know, he evolved from being a racist to eventually becoming Ann Atwater's friend and, you know, championing the rights of equality and stuff. So it is a little fascinating on that front. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if people kind of see this and think immediately like Green Book 2.0. It's not, mm-hmm. It's not a bad movie. There's some things I did like about it. The performances in particular were good. I don't love Taraji P. Henson's work. I think she's been better here at times. It feels a little bit like Madea, and she mentioned she kind of got a little inspiration from that, and some of the prosthetics she wears border on being a little caricature-y at times. And I just feel like some parts of the movie would probably have been better on stage as opposed to actual silver screen production. But I was floored by Sam Rockwell. He won a supporting Oscar for, ironically, also playing kind of a racist, bigoted character in Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri. I thought he was miles better here than he was in that movie. So he's got some really good moving moments, especially near the end. I will say that the movie doesn't necessarily kind of earn that transition. It feels a little rushed in some places, and this was done by a debut director, Robin Bissell, and the pacing just feels a little off in some areas. The editing, you know, transitions are kind of iffy. But, I mean, overall, if you watch this movie, it will have a lot of people, you know, leaving the theater feeling pretty good. Green Book kind of did the same thing. This will do that give that same effect. It's maybe not something that you probably think about whole bunch, but, you know, it's got a pretty good message. It'll leave you feeling warm. It just takes a little while to kind of get to that moment. It is a long movie, a lot longer. It needs to be 2 hours, 15 minutes. But, you know, overall, it's good. I wouldn't say it benefits from, like, a theater watch, but, you know, it's good. It's all right.
Yeah, you know what? I feel like that one was actually, like, really under the radar. I don't think I even heard about it until a week or two ago when I watched a trailer. And the first thing I was surprised by was that Rockwell was playing such a, you know, similar feeling role to Three Billboards.
Yep.
It just feels like an interesting character to dive right back into after you just did that. And it kind of struck me as, like, an Oscar bait-y type movie, like you mentioned, similar to Green Book. But, I don't know. I thought the trailers looked decent. So I'm glad to hear that you thought Rockwell knocked it out of the park, because I do really like him as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
So sounds like it's worthwhile to check out, you know, at the very least when it's out for, you know, renting or streaming.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I do think he's the strongest part of this movie. Him and Henson do have some really, really good scenes together. But yeah, he kind of floored me in a lot of different ways in this movie that I wasn't expecting. And again, I just found it very surprising that, you know, he got the win for supporting actor. And I feel like he's, you know, 5-10 times better here than he was in that Three Billboards movie. So yeah, I mean, if anyone who, you know, likes Rockwell, I highly recommend it. Everyone else, I think it's fine. It definitely doesn't benefit from like a theater watch or anything like that, but you know, it will leave you feeling good. And they do have a nice little actual ending when the credits roll, where you get to see the real life C.P. Ellis and Ann Atwater, and you know, there's some you know, legit authentic footage of them. I thought that was really, really sweet and kind of touching. So yeah, that's that on The Best of Enemies.
All right, good deal. Well, locking in the number 5 spot, down 2 from number 3 was Captain Marvel with another 12.4 domestically. All I'll say about this one is that this past weekend, I'm pretty sure it was the weekend that knocked it over the $1 billion mark,
mm-hmm.
Which did so in only 5 weeks in the theater. So just a absolutely monster run from this one. It's probably got plenty more to bring in the next couple weeks until Endgame comes out.
Yeah.
Number 4 spot, we've got Us with another 3.8 million. Looks like it's up to 152 domestically in 3 weeks. Let's see the global. 216. So pretty safe to say that Jordan Peele, you know, you can lock him in as a, you know, A+ director that's going to, you know, bring you a box office hit.
Yeah, and I don't know what the overall global takeaway was for Get Out. I feel like it wasn't maybe that that expansive. I do feel like Us can do a little more, just because I do think it's a little bit more of a encompassing story that will maybe attract, you know, a lot more different people from different backgrounds, as opposed to, you know, Get Out. Get Out is obviously a diverse movie, but you know, it is kind of very. I feel like it kind of focuses on problems that are very, like, American, you know, very,
right.
You know, for lack of a better word, black and white. Whereas with Us, you know, it might be a little more vague. Maybe the clarity isn't exactly there as Get Out, but I do think that kind of opens it up to maybe a little more of a global audience. So I just see Get Out did about almost 80 million foreign, and you said that Us, I feel like Us is just kind of starting to close on that a little bit. So I'm interested to see what the overall kind of final piece will look like when Us is all said and done.
Yeah, I mean, it's made 10 times its budget.
Yeah.
The one thing I will say is I'm not sure if Jordan Peele's next movie will have the benefit of as much anticipation as Us had.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we had this sleeper in Get Out that just absolutely floored people. You know, did pretty decent at the Oscars, you know, got a win, got some nominations, and in, like, you know, the anticipation for Us could not have been higher.
Right.
I think people are certainly going to want to see his next movie and they'll anticipate it greatly. But I think we were just so shocked by what a hit Get Out was. It even brought, you know, Us to the next level of, you know, excitement. But I mean, regardless, like, all really great stuff for Peele. I mean, he's killing it right now.
Yeah.
Number 3, we've got Dumbo with 18.2 million domestically. I haven't seen this. The one thing I will say is, I know I was way off on my guess for how much it was going to gross in its opening weekend.
Yeah, I feel like I wrote this down somewhere. Oh man, please tell me I documented this. Okay, I did write it down. You said 80 million, I said 60 million.
Oh man, it was 45.
Yeah.
Oh God.
I think we're both, man. You know, kind of we both kind of has had this, you know, thought that you know, there wasn't really a whole bunch family wise in the theater, so, you know, the elephant looked kind of cute, and that's going to bring some bodies in. It still did to an extent, but you know, the reviews have been pretty middling for the most part. I haven't seen it either, so I can't really comment on it that much, but you know, it definitely seems pretty middle of the road. and for me to probably go check it out with other things that are on my docket, they have to be really, really kind of good for me to kind of go out the way. So sadly, guys, I'm probably not going to get around to this one. But yeah, we both kind of overshot it, but I was a little closer. So dub for me.
Definitely. Yeah, it's definitely one that's going to, it's banking on the foreign gross. It's already brought in like $140 million overseas.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's doing fine, but certainly under my expectations. So the number two spot, we got a new release in Pet Sematary. It's a new take on the, I forget when the original came out, maybe 89?
89, was the first adaptation. About 30 years ago, exactly.
Yeah, so a Stephen King novel. I think it was, I'm not even sure if it was a cult classic at the time, or maybe it was just a hit from the go. But I'd say it's one of, King's more famous adaptations.
Sure.
And, let me stop talking. I didn't even see the movie, so I'll let you run with it from here.
It's totally fine. So this is an update from the 1989 version that I think also got a wide release as well. I'll just kind of skim through the story, essentially, but it follows a family of four known as the Creeds. They've relocated from Boston, the big city bustle of Boston, to go to like a small city, Maine, to really just slow down and, take in everything. Don't want to give a whole bunch of spoilers. Something, happens, an unspeakable tragedy, and one of the neighbors that they live around, Judd Crandall, he introduces, the Creeds of the spot, known as the Pet Sematary, that has a lot of magical power, and it can do some pretty amazing things, but it can do some things that probably aren't beneficial to the family. So I did see this on Monday.
That's the way of
putting it. Yeah, I did see this on Sunday. And John, I have not read the novel, nor have I read the 1989, or nor have I seen the 1989 version. So this was kind of like my first exposure to it. I liked the trailer for the most part, and I do like the movie. I will say that I was in love with the first two thirds more than the final third, but I do think there's some really good atmosphere for like the first 60 minutes. Some solid performances, both by the kids and by the family. Jason Clarke, he's not like my favorite actor. I don't think he's bad or anything like that. I just think like he's not super charismatic. Not necessarily this is a charismatic role, but the movie plays their strength, I think, for the most part. So I think he delivers on that front. There's some interesting backstory with the mother of the family and what she's kind of had to go through. There are some legitimately, I'd say, uneasy scenes. Nothing super, bloody or gory, but there's some, unsettling atmosphere, as well, I'll say. They definitely nail the forest and just the overall murkiness of the entire extent and existence. So I was super into it for like the first 60-70 minutes. It's the last 20-30 minutes that kind of had me checking out just a little bit. I will say that for anyone who has seen the 1989 version, did you say you caught it before?
I have seen it, yeah.
Okay. This one does make some massive changes, or so I've read, to that movie. So it's kind of divided some people. Some people love the change they made. It's they weren't expecting it, and it kind of makes the movie go in a different direction. Other people, think it just kills the movie. Me personally, okay, I don't necessarily mind the changes, and I guess I really don't have much to compare it to, but since I hadn't watched the movie. But I think it's I like that they kind of did something different. They didn't do a shot-for-shot retelling or remake of the movie. I guess my main concern or my main criticism of it is that, at some point with what kind of the characters do, there's suspending disbelief, but then there's also just the idea of, like, in what universe would you think this would go the way you want it to, What precedence is there for doing this, bringing something back that has been deceased, exactly the way it was.
Right.
So in some ways, that atmosphere I talked about kind of starts to get reduced by like the last 20, 30 minutes of the movie. And then it just, you know, ends kind of on a dour note, which everything I've read isn't too different from the 1989 version. But yeah, I think it's a much stronger first two thirds of the movie than the final act of the movie. But I did overall like it. It's a pretty good score. I definitely did not hate it by any stretch of the imagination. I'd probably lean, you're using like that moment in score, like 3 out of 5. And I think that's what Laverne kind of graded out as. And he's a little bit more of a tougher stiff on horror than I am. But yeah, I do think it's good. I think it's kind of like it wouldn't be a bad kind of date night movie. Some people are probably going to chuckle more at the end at certain areas than probably the movie and the directors want you to do. But yeah, I mean, I found myself entertained for the most part.
Okay. Did you get did it get a few good jumps out of you?
Yeah, it did. Some of them are, you know, telegraphed. That's not necessarily that's not unheard of with horror. Sometimes you can see things, you know, coming from a mile away. But you know, there was some stuff that was earned as far as the scares go too. So yeah, it got some jumps. I'm not like a screamer by any stretch of imagination, but yeah, you know, it kind of had me a little uneasy that first 60, 70 minutes of the movie. So yeah, I would still lightly recommend. You know, just know that maybe the last third is kind of weak compared to what comes before it. But yeah, I thought it was good. I thought it was in some ways, I'll say this. I don't think it's as good as Us by any stretch of the imagination. But okay. I do think it does certain aspects of like a traditional horror better than that movie. And they're not the same movie. But I do think that if you're looking for something that maybe just plays it a lot more straighter, Pet Sematary might be a little better in that regard. But overall, I mean, Us is a much superior movie. But I did like it. You know, I would lightly recommend. Definitely had a pretty good time for the first 60, 70 minutes of the flick.
Okay. Well, yeah, I was a fan of the original. I thought the trailer looked decent for this one. So I think it sounds like it's a worthwhile watch. All right. Well, with that, we'll go ahead and dive into the number one movie of the weekend, which I did get a chance to see. And that is, with no surprise, DC's latest venture into their universe with Shazam, which brought in $53.5 million domestically on a $100 million budget. Just a real quick run through of Shazam. It's about an orphan kid, Asher Angel. Oh, shoot, I'm sorry. Billy Batson, played by Asher Angel. Lives in a foster home, and he's continually trying to find his mother. They were separated when he was very young, and it's kind of his goal in life. He's a troublemaker. Winds up helping out one of the, you know, foster siblings that he has, and following this, he winds up getting led to a wizard's cave. Or lair, if you will, on a like magic subway, or I guess the subway car he's on undergoes some magic from this wizard played by Jaimin Hansu, and he transfers his power to Billy, who's, you know, supposedly pure of heart, and then Billy's able to become a superhero. Shazam is his alter ego, who's played by Zachary Levi. Yep. Thank you. All right. Make sure I didn't butcher that. But yeah, and then from there, it's essentially, you know, Billy is, you know, a 13, 14-year-old kid at heart with the, you know, all the powers of a superhero. And it's kind of a, you know, a humorous take on, you know, how he goes about understanding his powers and, you know, what he starts to use them for, which isn't exactly, you know, the traditional, you know, hero's journey at first. And he winds up going up against Dr. Savannah, played by Mark Strong, who's got similar powers, but he's using them for pure evil. Mm. So, I guess my take on it is I went in pretty excited. And I for some reason, I just completely overlooked the fact that it's, you know, it's geared towards a younger audience.
And at the end of the day, you know, why wouldn't it be? It's about a young kid who's becomes a superhero. So I would say a lot of the humor is, you know, geared towards probably, the younger teenage audience. I mean, overall, the movie's a fun time. It's definitely, funny to see him start to get a feel for his superpowers and, testing out which superpowers that he actually has. There's definitely, quite a few funny parts in his relationship with his foster brother, Freddie, who I cannot find the young kid's name that played him. But, I definitely got a few laughs throughout. But yeah. I think my main takeaway probably about, halfway, two-thirds of the way through the movie is, oh, I kind of misjudged this on, it's actually not geared towards myself as maybe Marvel movies seem to be, or, other DC movies, but it's definitely for that younger teenage audience. So, enjoyable movie, definitely got some decent laughs. I would say the action is a little lackluster. It's certainly not what I've come to hope for from the Russo brothers in the Marvel universe. And I guess the one thing I would say is, it had a $100 million budget and it feels like it did. Whereas, some of these other superhero movies get, upwards of $200 million.
Yeah.
I think this one definitely struggled with some of the effects at times. But it's a worthwhile watch. It's a fun movie. It's a feel-good movie for sure. But I think I just didn't have the proper expectation going into it.
Oh, okay. I've heard really nothing but super high critical acclaim for it, and I guess by nature, I'll be honest, I'm kind of more of a skeptical person sometimes when I hear all that. So I'm still kind of, when I watch it, I'm still going in with kind of tempered hopes and tempered expectations. It sounds like though it's a watch in theater, so I think I will have to get to it. Hopefully this weekend, but I don't know. Like I've seen the trailers, and I didn't laugh a whole bunch of the trailers. I kind of felt like it was just maybe too corny than I would like. But I've been reading enough about it that the heart is there, and the lightness is there, and it's much kind of different than what we come to expect from DC. So. They're trying different things, and I guess the interesting thing, if you think about it, is, maybe if they would have kind of started off and just did this in reverse, and then kind of lead to the Justice League and kind of those team up movies, then maybe I guess everyone would be talking about the DCEU a lot differently than we do. I think people are starting to kind of get excited for it now. That's obviously not how it started. Just with Shazam and Aquaman, I feel like those movies, both of them have been pretty well received at this point. So I guess it just, long story short, it makes you kind of question the approach with, why they just, threw everyone together when maybe they could have still had these type of relatively good quality movies and, build to something.
Yeah, it seems like they definitely did things in the wrong order. If you look at the Marvel movies, they started off as pretty lighthearted, and yeah. I think that they got darker as they went along, and the series got more serious. Whereas DC started off super dark, they didn't get enough of attraction from the audience in Zack Snyder's takes, and then they switched to Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Shazam, more going for the laughs and attracting a wider audience, and they've definitely had success in doing so. So I think you're right. They probably started off and taking things in the wrong direction, and it really came back to bite them. The one thing, interesting thing I was just reading was relative newcomer director David F. Sandberg. His previous two movies were Annabelle Creation and Lights Out.
I was just looking at that.
It was just some short films that he directed. So. Pretty impressive jump, I would say, from small budget horror flicks to getting to helm a DC Universe picture.
Mm-hmm.
Not bad.
Yeah, I've not seen Annabelle Creation, but I do remember Lights Out from 2016. I thought it was a pretty good, PG-13 offering, and it was one movie that kind of came to mind. But if I remember a whole bunch about that movie, it was kind of pretty family oriented. It dealt with you know, depression and, you know, just sort of like a PG-13 version, a little bit of Hereditary. I remember that movie. I thought it was pretty good. I didn't think it was a great horror movie, but, you know, it was kind of quick, 80, 81 minutes. And that was his debut. So yeah, I didn't know he was doing Shazam. That has me a little more interested now. Obviously, different movies, but
did you say that you thought Lights Out was a family movie?
No. Lights Out kind of was like it was sort of like a PG-13 version, in my opinion. Now seeing Hereditary a couple years later of Hereditary, you know, you kind of had that depression angle and. You know, the difficulties with the daughter and the mother and, you know, how they've never seen kind of eye to eye. And, you know, it definitely gets lost at times with, like, its exposition and whatnot. But, you know, I did think it was, you know, not necessarily a super straightforward horror movie. He tried to do some things, you know, with that. And I thought it was a pretty good debut based off of his short. So, no, not a family movie. and not you know, Hereditary level you know, depth, but I thought it was a pretty good 2016 horror flick.
I thought he got some good jumps out of that one, if I remember correctly.
He did, yeah. I mean, it's he felt like it was kind of, or at least looking at the trailer, I remember it seemed kind of gimmicky, but you know, it was kind of one of those gimmicks I felt was earned. You know, if he did it, like something was coming. It wasn't just like a false scare or something. So. No, he did have some pretty good scares out of that one. Some earned scares too. Pretty well constructed scares.
Yeah, I would agree. I think he pieced a couple of them together very well. So that is that's it for the weekend box office recap. I know we're pushing time here, so I'll run through what we got coming up next weekend, Mark. I honestly don't have a ton to add. Feel free to touch on anything, but. Coming up this weekend, we've got After, Hellboy, Little, and Missing Link. I only really know anything about Hellboy and Missing Link. I'll let you go if you wanted to say anything about any of these movies.
Honestly, I'm sorry. I really don't have a whole bunch to say. The one that sticks out to me the most is Hellboy. I was never really a massive fan, though, of the 2004 or 2003. I think it was 2004. But they're redoing this one. I think that first Hellboy was like PG-13. So this one, they're going all in on the R. They said they try to make it a little bit more like gothic and horrific. I don't know, though. All I've seen of like the trailer still feels like, you know, it's probably going to be a lot more bloodier. But it still feels like it's got kind of like a whimsical tone a little bit, if that makes sense. So I'm kind of skeptical about the new direction they're taking this one. I do like David Harbour. I think he's kind of an underrated actor in a couple of different things he's done. But I don't have a whole bunch of, like, you know, desire for this. And I'm not one of those guys that's, you know, a stickler against runtime. But I see it's, you know, going to be 2 hours and 28 minutes. But I've already kind of have limited excitement for this movie. Like 2 hours and 28 minutes for this, I don't think I can make it, man. I'm out.
That is long. I thought it was like an hour and 45. Oh my god.
Yeah, I'm out. I think I'm out on this one. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, man. I like David Harbour. I think he's phenomenal on Stranger Things.
Yeah.
He was my main draw to this, but after I saw how CGI heavy the trailers look, mm-hmm. that really turned me off.
Yeah.
But not as much as 2.5 hours is. Good lord.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a lot, man. I'm gonna need rave reviews to give this one a chance at this point.
Yeah, and it's directed by Neil Marshall. He's got, you know, quite the resume in horror. He's done The Descent, which is really one of the best horror movies of the 2000s. That came out in 2005 and. He's done some other things too, like Dog Soldiers, and I haven't seen all of his filmography, but you know, he definitely has an appreciation for horror. But this is like, I think, his biggest movie that he's ever done. I don't know what the actual budget is. I think it's $85 million, so you know, less than what the Shazam movie will be. But yeah, I was looking at it. It just doesn't look convincing in that trailer. You know, nothing that I can really sink my teeth into. You can't compare the two movies, but I remember I had a huge issue with the Nutcracker and the Four Realms. Everything just felt super artificial. I feel like this would be like the same way, but just, you know, in hell. But I won't really care much for this for the story they're telling. And then when I see it's not, 1 hour 40 minutes, but you know, 2.5 hours. Ish, I don't know, man.
It's too much for me. I got too busy of a weekend ahead of me. I got to watch the Masters on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
I'm going to rewatch all my favorite Game of Thrones episodes to lead into the opening of season 8 that Sunday night. So I don't have the time to risk it with a 2.5 hour movie.
Yeah. I was just thinking, April is like a huge month. I mean, obviously we got the Masters you hit on, Game of Thrones, the fight for the throne, the last season, some other stuff I'm probably forgetting too, but
Avengers.
Yep. Oh man, I did not say Avengers, but yeah, that's right there at the end of the month. Anyone who's into sports, obviously we're wrapping up the championship tonight, but the playoffs start on Saturday. The NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs start on Wednesday. Baseball kicked off. April is an extremely busy month, so I definitely feel like if it's not a guarantee or a sure thing, you know, might have to be put on the back burner for a little bit.
Yeah, it's stacked, man. No doubt about it. And it's what also is stacked is this episode that we've had so far.
Yeah.
So I don't have anything else to touch on with the upcoming releases, Mark. But you got any last thoughts there?
Not a whole bunch. I think maybe the only movie that I will get to this week, it got released on Saturday on HBO, which actually one of my favorite novels I've ever read. But HBO came out with Native Son, and I remember reading that book in depth, in full, when I was like 16 or 17. Very, very, you know, heavy story. And the pieces that I've heard about it have been kind of mixed, but I do want to give it a watch because I love the novel. So I'm sure I'll probably end up watching it and maybe even covering it on thatmomentin.com. But yeah, I mean, as far as probably getting to the theater this weekend, I probably won't do that. So, but you can expect that from me at some point. My thoughts on Native Son. So, I guess the only other thing we've got is, me posing kind of a question to you. I know we kind of ran a little over the last time, so we kind of had to put it off the back burner.
Getting to know you, getting to know all about you. Getting to like you, getting to hope you like me. Getting to know you, putting it my way, but nicely. You are precisely my cup of tea.
I'll keep this relatively quick, relatively brief.
Sure.
What I'd like to know from you, John, is what was your first instance where you felt like a man? And let me clarify this a little bit. So
yeah, I'm gonna need more than that, Mark.
Let me clarify this a little bit. So everyone's had crushes, movie crushes that they remember, in depth, maybe when they're just growing up, and maybe it was the first time you're like, man, girls aren't icky, girls are interesting. What do you have, like that one or two movies? Maybe with a specific role, with a specific, actress that, you felt just, wow, like, I'm in love with her. I love this character. I love her aesthetic. Do you have any, like, childhood movies like that?
I'm trying to think if there's anything earlier than this, but Shannon Elizabeth in American Pie.
Wow.
I fell in love with her.
For some reason, I thought you were maybe going to go with, a PG-13 movie. But, man, you went out there with the you went for the gold, man. You grabbed the brass ring on that selection. But I actually did not get around to watching American Pie growing up. It's actually one of those movies I watched for the first time a couple years ago. Funny, funny movie. And kind of groundbreaking in a lot of different ways. But that's an interesting choice. That deserves a slow clap. You probably can't hear that, but that's an interesting choice. He's rather ravishing in that movie.
Yeah, it like almost caught me off guard when I saw it. I was like, what is going on right now? This is completely different than something I've ever felt. It's definitely nothing, which is weird because I'm such a James Bond fan. Yep. You think I'd be like, oh, Ursula Andress or, I don't know, Denise Richards.
Yeah.
Which may be her too. But no, the first one that comes to mind is Shannon Elizabeth, okay. For sure. That's like one of the most vivid memories was seeing her in American Pie. And I was just like, oh my God.
So you're probably like the character played by Jason Biggs. I forget his name, but you know, I feel like everyone's seen that movie now to know kind of what we're talking about. Won't yeah. refer to it, but if that happened, I understand.
No comment.
But yeah, you know, that's I think that's about everything I've got. You know, we had a pretty thorough episode here, but you know, when we're away for a week, we try to pack in these as we can. So yeah, you got anything else you want to leave the old listeners on?
Yeah, man, you know, I'm trying to think if I'm going to get any content out this week.
Sure.
I should really do something about Game of Thrones because I'm so excited for the premiere on Sunday. It's just, I don't even know where I would start with something to write about. So I'll see if I can craft something. But what can we expect from you this week? Anything outside of Native Son?
Probably not anything outside of Native Son. I hope to have something with Native Son, probably by the end of the weekend here. Got a fairly busy week as well, but good thing about HBO, to watch it whenever. So, yeah. Just Native Son. Next week we'll have some interesting things, I think, coming out to the theater that might maybe go back or on a screener or something to get to. But yeah, nothing past Native Son, or at least nothing I can immediately guarantee. So that's it for me, man.
All right, well, good deal. It was, Mark, it was a pleasure. I feel like we had a lot to talk about. Yeah, otherwise, I think we should be back with a brand new episode next week.
Sounds like a plan. You guys take care. Thanks for listening.
Awesome. Thanks, everybody.
Cinema Recap is a proud member of That Moment In Podcast Network. Find all your favorite shows over on the site thatmomentin.com. We are available on iTunes, Spotify, Player FM, Radio Public, Stitcher, Podomatic, everywhere. Just search That Moment In. Thank you all for listening.